Good morning, everyone. Let's try that again. Good morning, everyone. Perfect. We're going to talk about DevOps, but we're going to talk about it in the context of a disaster. Every disaster starts with a phone call. But you don't know it's a disaster at first, so you pick up the phone, it's like, hey, what's going on, man? Like, hey, Donovan, I think your website's down. Of course, I'm like, no, dude, I'm a pro. My website's not down, right? It's always denial, right? You're sitting there, you're just like, there's no way my website's down. Matter of fact, I know for a fact it's not down, so what I'm going to do is I'm just go ahead and pull up my mobile app here, put you on speakerphone, and show you that the app actually works. So I'm going to show you that the app actually works, right? Well, you know what? James helped me write this, so I know the app's not that good. So let me go to a web browser. I need to go to a web browser here and bring up the mobile app itself. I mean, the actual website itself is just going to, oh, crap. Okay, so I told those guys, don't use Angular anymore. Go to Vue, right? They didn't listen to me, so the website's down. Actually, I think it's actually my service here is just not that good. So what we're going to do instead is we're going to come over, and I'm just going to use an actual web browser on a real machine here. And we're just going to go to dev.peopletracker. And you can play along if you want to, if I can spell peopletracker.us. And this website should just pop right up. So now you're in a state of what we call denial, right? You're just sitting in your car, just saying,
No.
So you're in denial that it's not working, but then you start to realize that, crap, man, my site's really not working. Like, what is going on? And then you start to get angry, right? Like, I thought I had IT pros on my team. Clearly, I have IT amateurs on my team. Right? Because my site's not freaking up, right? Why are the developers not doing this? And then you realize you're not mad at your developers, you're mad at yourself. Because there's a way to prevent this. I should have gotten a notification that my site was down. I should have known before my customers did that there was a problem with my site. And I'm really, really angry about this.
Hell no! No!
We've all been there. We've all felt that way, right? But after you get angry, you basically start bargaining with anyone. Hey, guys, okay, so it looks like the site is actually down. Can anyone wake up right now and help me get the site back up? Because you know it's all hands on deck. It's all a manual process. If our site is down, I need everybody paying attention now. And I'm bargaining. Oh, I'm trying to be nice. Hope James didn't hear what I said about his app. Hope the guys didn't hear what I said about Vue and Angular. Please get the services back up. I don't even need the website back up, just the services. Because if the services are back up, the mobile app will work. Our partners' applications will work. Let's get that up first, and then we'll move on and worry about the website. You're bargaining with everybody. And they try to tell you, like, Donovan, we want to help you. We want to make the site work, but there's no way. Like, everything seems to just have disappeared. We can't get to our analytics. We can't get to our statistics. We can't remote into any machines. Donovan, we want to help you, but we can't. So you go from bargaining over to depression. Right? It's like, holy mackerel, like, what do we do? How is my site like this? I just don't understand how we're here. And then what do you do after you go to depression? You finally find out that there's an acceptance stage. But before I accept this, I gotta go see if there's something else that I can do here. So I'm depressed, but my website's not coming up. I'm gonna go to the Azure portal. Why? Because the Azure portal is where everything that I own actually lives. Every resource, the entire system is in there. So what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna bring up my resource groups, and I'm gonna show you all, So this right here, this page, which actually crashed my entire presentation, that's how bad our situation is right now. This normally, imagine if you will, the Azure portal showing you an empty resource groups, right? All right, we're gonna stop this and start it right one more time. So what you're gonna see on the screen here in a moment is my subscription. This is a Azure portal, and what happened was there is absolutely no resources in there at all. I'm gonna go back, see if I can get this thing to pop out of this problem here. Let's try this again. Just for a moment you saw it. Yeah, we're gonna have to get this fixed out because I only have like two more slides and the rest of this thing is all demo, so we're gonna get this flashing to have to fix. But what you'll notice if you look inside of there is every single resource has been deleted. Right? Someone ran a command they shouldn't have run and deleted every single resource in my subscription. We are dead in the water, right? Once you're dead in the water, the only place to go after depression is acceptance. Call the first number you can think of.
911, what's your emergency?
Yeah.
Right?
So.
My website's down. How do I get my website back up? That's the goal right now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to stop the presentation. Hopefully that'll stop the flickering here. So let me get out of here. I'm going to switch over to another desktop that hopefully will show you exactly how we're going to fix this particular problem here. Yeah, I have no idea why it does not want to show that. All right, we're going to call an audible here real quick. See if I can start a browser on this side that stays up. All right, cool. Doesn't like me switching desktops. So let's go over here to the black shirt. What I'm taking you to now is Azure DevOps. We are in the middle of a crisis. Normally, this would mean call everybody that you know, wake everybody up, let's all get into a war room, and let's figure this stuff out. But if you've ever seen me speak before, you know I'm a big fan of DevOps. And I believe DevOps is the cure to most things. You just rub a little DevOps on it, and you make it better, right? So all I have to do to survive this crisis is one thing. I'm going to push this button over here. So once I get into my particular project, I'm then going to come and queue what we call a pipeline. So from here, I'm simply going to click this button. Queue another pipeline. Let's just go ahead and go. And what's so amazing about this, and what I'm going to be showing you for the next few minutes here, is how this pipeline is going to rehydrate our entire environment. Kubernetes clusters, Azure Container Registries, websites, everything that we need. That website that is not working, the mobile app that is not working, in a few minutes will just simply start to work again. And everything will be provisioned, and I'll show you my Azure subscription as well. So let's go ahead and see if we can get that page up here as well. So I'm going to go to the portal.azure.com. And if I take you into my resource groups, like I was showing before, I got to get there quick, because soon stuff is going to start popping up there. But originally, it was absolutely empty. And I know why it's empty, because I do have that magical command that will actually allow me to delete everything in my subscription. All right, so these flashes aren't actually not a problem. They're just throwing me off here. But there we go. So close. It's like Azure is so powerful, it sucks all the energy out of the room. So it's just you can't see the screen anymore. All right, we're going to kill the Azure portal again. You're angry. Why are you angry? Because you know there's a better way. You've seen me speak before. You know the products exist. You know the processes exist to where this should not be a crisis. You're depressed. Why? Because you're never given the time, the resources, or the ability to go do the things that you know you should have been able to do to recover from a disaster like the one that I just described. How does this all start? Starts with DevOps. If you ask me what DevOps is, it's this. DevOps is the union of people, process, and products to enable continuous delivery of value to our end users. The most important word of that sentence is value. We are not here to deliver features. We're not here to deliver infrastructure. We are here to deliver value. Why do I focus on value so hard? Because I visit a lot of our customers at Microsoft. And when I do, they say, Donovan, man, it seems like our operations team and our dev teams don't like each other. Like, what are you talking about? Like, they fight all the time. Like, they're always pointing fingers at each other. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah. It's like they work against each other. I'm like, well, talk to me about how you incentivize these two teams. Like, well, obviously, our operations teams, we incentivize them by keeping uptime, keeping the lights on, keeping our servers and our infrastructure healthy. Like, that makes sense. That's what most people do. How do you incentivize your developers? By adding new features to our product, by innovating and making changes. Like, that's interesting because it sounds like they are designed to work against each other. What do you mean? The operations teams get the big bonuses and the rewards by keeping the lights on the servers on, right? It says yes. Like, you know the easiest way to keep a server healthy that's already healthy? Don't change it. If it's healthy and I don't change it, it'll stay healthy. But you just told your developers, go attack the servers and change them as much as you possibly can, and I'll give you a big, giant bonus. You have taught them to work against each other. I, as a developer, am incentivized to go hit the machine that that person is designed to protect. Like, how are we supposed to work together? We're not actually incentivized together. However, if we change the narrative, and we say the bonuses are only given to the operations team and the development team that actually delivers value, they will naturally start to work together. Because to deliver value means we have to be able to add those new features. We have to prove that those features are being added. And I love the word value because if I said deliver software, all the operations people in the room would just shut off and say, this person's not talking to me. I thought it was called DevOps. Why are you only talking to the developers about changing software? And I'm a firm believer that operations teams can deliver value without us having to change a single line of our actual software. Matter of fact, I just bought a ton of stuff on July 1st because there was all these sales at Best Buy. The traffic was coming to the Best Buy website. Did you have to change a single line of your software to deliver value? No. Best Buy just needed to scale up or scale out their infrastructure, and all of a sudden they can deliver value. Because as the traffic came, the response time stayed down, people bought more merchandise, and they delivered value without changing a single line of your software. It's not about software, it's about value. And that's why I want to focus on that. Let's get the teams working together. Now, there's two other words in here that are important: people and process. People is the hardest part. Why? Because some of these seats are empty. Your peers are not here. I hope you leave this realizing what the power of DevOps and what it can do for your organization, but now you're going to have to go back and convince your peers that this stuff is true, because they're not sitting here. And trust me, they're going to want to keep doing it the way that they've always been doing it. The biggest deterrent to implementing DevOps is success, because if I've been successful without it, why do I think I need to implement it? We don't like change, even if we know change is for the better. Every one of us knows that we should be working out. Am I going to go work out after this meeting? Absolutely not. Right? I'm going to go home, and I'm going to relax and keep doing what I've always been doing, even though I know I should be working out. We've got to get your people to understand that DevOps is not an option. It's not a nice to have. It is fundamentally necessary for you to compete. The days of you debating on if I should or should not implement DevOps are over. You either implement DevOps or you lose. It's that freaking simple. Don't believe me? Ask the taxi company what Uber did to them. I would tell you to go ask Blockbuster, but they don't exist anymore because of Netflix. Right? Look at the bookstores, what happened to them with Amazon. They were attacked by companies who thought differently. Even though they were successful at one point, the biggest in their industry at one point, some no-name came out of nowhere, started thinking differently, rubbing DevOps on everything, and completely displaced an industry. And that's what you can do in yours. Don't wait for someone else to be that change in your industry. Be the one that leads that change. Be the one out-innovating your competition. Because if you do not realize this, you're going to be passed by those that do. And it's funny because I go and speak again to a lot of our customers at Microsoft. And they're so excited that Donovan's coming, he's going to talk to us about DevOps. I'm like, you do realize that all of your competition are also our customers. I've already spoken to them. You're still late, right? You've got to make sure that you realize that this is imperative that you do this. The process is easy. How many of you believe that you're agile? A few of you, right? I say believe because when I start asking you the tough questions, I realize you're not actually doing Scrum, right? You're not actually doing Agile. You're what they call Scrum butts. I'm Scrum, but I don't quite do it just right, right? So nevertheless, if you are trying to be Agile or trying to be Scrum, you should know what a product backlog is. For those who are not, a product backlog is a laundry list of any and everything that you want your software to do. The most important thing about that list is it should be in priority order, which means the most important thing should be at the top. How do we know if it's the most important thing or not? Well, our product owner said it was. So therefore, it must be the most important thing. But why are we guessing? Why are we wondering and assuming that they're right when instead we can actually monitor it while it's running in production and determine if we actually delivered value or not? You can't just say you delivered value. You now have to prove that you delivered value. And we have the technology to let you do that. If you were to go and do the top thing on your product backlog, push it out into production, and have telemetry that shows you that nobody used it, you did not deliver value. It's okay. Now that we know that, we can go back in and reprioritize our product backlog, maybe move some of those items from the bottom to the top. And if that moves the needle, we need to do more of that and less of that other thing. Now, just because the needle did not move does not mean your idea was not important. It does not mean it wasn't valuable. But what it does mean, maybe it wasn't intuitive. Maybe our customers couldn't find it. Maybe they got started with it and they bailed out because it was too complicated. But now you have hard numbers that say, we pushed what we believe to be important and nobody used it. Let's go try an experiment where we put one of those cool toasts that says, hey, look at this new thing that we created. Let's put it a little bit lower inside of our navigation. Let's make it a little bit more intuitive to use and see if that actually moves the needle. Now that you've done that experiment and you've actually looked to see if we delivered value or not, if it still doesn't move the needle, chances are that's not important. Let's go do something else. But use the actual numbers to go do that. Monitoring is crucially important, not only to make sure that they're using it, but to make sure that it's also healthy as well. So again, when I say DevOps, this is what I'm talking about. And I believe if you do this correctly, recovering from a disaster is just a deployment. There's no major ceremony about it. You just run a build, and hopefully everything works out perfectly after that. So let's talk about how this all starts. It all starts with the committing of code. And I use the word code versus software because infrastructure as code is something that your operations team is going to do. Changing your software commits to that code is what your developers are going to do. But code is the key here. We want as much as we can put in our repository in our repository. Not only the code for this application, but the definition of our infrastructure, even the definition of the build and the release. If we can get it inside of source code, we want it. Our friends at Dynatrace are putting monitoring inside the repository. It's not something you have to go click around inside of a UI anymore. You define it in a file that is then acted upon inside your pipeline. You want as much as code as you can. What's going to happen is the developer is going to commit that code, and it's going to go up into a repository. When it lands in that repository, it's going to trigger what we call a build. CI is crucially important. All right, be honest. The camera can only see me, so they won't see you raise your hands on this one. But how many of you work on a team right now that does not have continuous integration? All right, that is, it's 2019, everyone. Like, how do you not have continuous integration? And I bet everyone who just raised their hand has tried at some point to convince their teams to add continuous integration, but they told you it wasn't worth it, right? It takes too long. We have deadlines. Just get back to work. We'll worry about that later. There's lots of bad things about that behavior. And implementing it, by the way, you can do for free, and you didn't have to tell anyone. Now that you've asked for permission and you do it anyway, you're going to get in trouble. But if you hadn't asked and you had just done it, then you would have done it and you would have immediately reaped benefits and no one on your team would have even have known. If all of us are working together and we're all committing to a Git repository and we do not have continuous integration, I, as Donovan Brown, can tomorrow go and implement it and none of you will even know I did it. You will still be committing to the exact same repository the exact same way you did before. The day that you will know that I did something special is when we're all, well, I should say when all of you are at the water cooler complaining about the last person who broke the build. Because if you do not have continuous integration in your organization, you have experienced the point where someone pushes code that's broken, you pulled the latest version, you tried to compile it, and everything was broken. And out of habit, most of us do that in the morning. We get in the morning, we pull the latest version of code, we try to get to work, and you're all broken. You're going to be sitting at the water cooler complaining about the person who broke the build, but I won't be at the water cooler. I'm going to be over there programming my butt off. And they're like, how is Donovan still working? And they're going to go over and say, didn't you pull the latest code today? I'm like, no way. Like, the code is broken. It's like, how did you know the code was broken? Oh, yeah, I set up this thing called a CI server. And it runs code every single time you commit code and lets me know if it's broken or not. So I know better than they go pull the latest code. Man, how do I get on that? Oh, it's cool. Just give me your email address. It'll notify you, too. You've completely changed the conversation. You didn't try to convince them with words that this was a good process. You actually let the results speak for themselves. And now all of a sudden, everybody wants in on it. And you didn't have to go ask permission to go do it. You can do that at several different stages of this particular life cycle here. Builds can do more than just compile your code. They can do security scans on your code to make sure that you're not going to be the next Equifax, to make sure that you're not using packages that you don't want to use. It's going to allow you to run unit tests to make sure it's high-quality code. It's going to allow you to do static code analysis to make sure it's using the right formatting, the right style for your particular team. It'll then be able to take your Docker files and build them into images and store them into registries for you. The CI process is an extremely important process. In my mind, I vision DevOps almost like this series of dominoes that fall. And CI is that first domino that falls, that starts this chain reaction of taking the code from the fingertips of your developers and putting it into the hands of your users. It's crucially important. If you do not have CI, if you raised your hand a moment ago, please go back and install it and just implement it yourself. We'll give you the tools for free. And I'll show you how to get started in a minute. Automated testing. Test early, test often. Automate as much as you possibly can. You need to be running unit tests. And everyone's like, ah, I don't need to be. I haven't written unit tests in 30 years. Yeah, and your code has sucked for 30 years. Right? So, and, right? Funny thing, I used to be that developer, right? I did not believe in unit testing. And I got really tired of writing all these unit tests that never failed. Like, this is a total waste of time. I could have written a lot more code had I not written these unit tests. But what I was missing was when that first unit test fails, that's when it pays dividends for you. When there's a bug that you would have pushed to production that you found out in 2 seconds because a unit test failed. Many of you, have you ever played ping pong with yourself? What I mean by this is someone comes running into your office, oh my God, Donovan, there's a bug in the software, can you fix it? And you panic, and you get into code, and you fix that bug, and you ship it, and everybody's happy. Then a couple weeks later, another crisis happens. Donovan, there's another bug, we need you to go in there and fix it. No problem, I go in there and I fix the second bug, I push it, everyone's patting me on the back. Then 3 days later, I get another bug report, but man, it feels familiar. It's like, man, this is like deja vu. I know I fixed this before. Like, this feels real. Like, I'm in the same file I was in last time. Hold on, I think I know how to fix this really quickly, and I fix it. 3 days later, I get another bug report, and it feels very familiar to the second bug I fixed a couple days ago. Like, what's happening here? What's happening here is these two pieces of code are related to each other. But you'll never know that because you haven't taken the time to write a unit test. I'm not asking you to stop what you're doing and go write unit tests for 30 years worth of code that's not broken. But that bug, the first bug I got, I should have stopped and written a unit test for that one bug. That's how you get started. You don't go back in and write hundreds of thousands of tests for code that's not broken. You write code for the piece that you know is broken, the bug that you're fixing right this second. Then what would have happened is I would have written the test, fixed the code, pushed it, gotten the pat on the back, a week later, gotten the other bug, written a test, fixed that, and then when I ran both tests, one of them would have failed. I would have known instantly that these two pieces of code are related to each other, and I have to re-architect it such that both of these tests actually pass, and I'll stop playing ping pong with myself immediately. You can do that with unit tests, UI tests, pen tests, performance tests, load tests, test early, test often, and automate it inside your pipeline. Now this one is tough. Right? It's funny, when I did last time I did this demo was at a general conference, so I had to ask everyone, how many of you in here are mobile developers? I don't think I need to do that here. Right? All of you are mobile developers, but there's a challenge that I met, and I've spoken to some of my friends about it. When you have a system that you bolt on a mobile front end to, there's an existing method that goes with it, right? Before I had a mobile front end, I had a dev environment, a QA environment, and a production environment. The dev is where all my teams would come together, make sure their code worked. They would promote it to QA, where they would run their UAT, automated tests, and load tests, and then they would then promote it again inside of production, where it would run full time. You know how many times we built the application? We built the application once. And then what we would do is we would change configuration files as part of our pipeline that would push it through the pipeline. So now all of a sudden I introduce a mobile application. But that mobile application is now has to point at one of these three backends. Which one does it point at? I don't want to recompile it. But most of the people that I meet recompile their app. They compile it and it points to dev. They recompile it again and then it points to QA. And they recompile it again and it finally points to production. Like, you don't want to rebuild the app multiple times, so how do you guys fix this on mobile? And I met this company in England. He's like, oh, Donovan, we've already fixed that for you. I'm like, really? Talk to me about it. So what we did is that we compile it and we hard code production in there. I was like, okay. But then what we did is we put an Easter egg in the application. Our testers knew the Easter egg. They would then go in there and then they could type in the different backend that they needed to point at for dev, QA, or prod, and move it, so we didn't have to build it more than once. I'm like, cool, how did that work? Because it didn't work at all. I'm like, then why are you telling me about it? Oh, no, this is the evolution, right? That didn't work. It's like, why did that not work? So the Easter egg, people would forget how to get there, right? So we made the Easter egg too hard, so what we did going next step was we put it right inside settings. I'm like, hold on, so your users can find it? It's like, yeah, our users can find it. It's like, is that a problem? It's like, not enough to that we worry about it. I'm like, really? It's like, yeah. It's like, but that didn't work either, Donovan. I'm like, well, why didn't this one work? He says, what would happen is our testers would go in there, and then they would type in the wrong string. I'm like, crap. So like, they didn't know what the actual URL was. I said, how did you fix that? He's like, oh, we changed it to a dropdown, right? And it has three selections in there, dev, QA, and prod, and they can't screw it up anymore. But of course, our customers go in there and screw it up. I was like, so that worked better? He's like, no, that didn't work either. I'm like, come on, you're killing me. Like, how did that not work? Because the problem was is that they would forget. So now they get a brand new version of the software, it defaults to production, and it's beta bits pointing at production, wreaking havoc, right? I'm like, holy crap, it's like, how'd you fix that? It's like, yeah, we haven't fixed that one yet. I'm like, wow. I was like, there has to be a better way. Why does my mobile app not just know what version of the backend it needs to point to without having to be recompiled? As a developer, I set off to fix this particular problem, and I'll show you how I did it today. But what ends up happening is I have something I call a burr server, backend resolver. It resolves the backend for the mobile application, and the backend is actually updated as part of my DevOps pipeline. So as the pipeline promotes version 7 of my app to QA, it updates the central repository saying, oh, by the way, version 7, your backend is now in QA, and here's the URL you should use. Then my mobile app fires up and says, hey, where am I? I'm version 7. It's like, you're in QA. Here's your URL. And the entire app just pops to life and works perfectly. I build it one time. I deploy it multiple times. It gets even better than that, right? Because if you think about distributing your application, sometimes I need to know, are you in dev or are you in QA? Because I use Xamarin Test Cloud. How many of you use Xamarin Test Cloud? Awesome feature, right? But if you test on iOS, it's a pain in the butt. Why? Because you got to have Calabash running, right? But if you have Calabash running, can I submit it to the App Store? Absolutely not, right? So how am I supposed to do that? The actual literature says, use an ifdef. How many programmers have been burned by an ifdef? Everyone raise your hand. Like, all of us, right? It's like, it's a horrible piece of advice to put an ifdef in your code, which means I'm actually going to have to compile it how many times? At least twice, right? Once with it enabled, once with it off. But I thought, why don't I just put inside of the burr server what environment that I'm in? So that I can now have an if statement, not an ifdef, which means it's the exact same binary that I'm testing that I'm shipping. I'll turn on the Calabash if I'm in dev or QA. I'll turn it off when I'm inside production, and everybody's happy, but I only build it one time. Distributing a mobile app really can get complicated, but something as simple as a burr server can make all this stuff easy for you, and you go back to the best practice of you build it one time, you deploy it multiple times. I'll show you how that works. Monitoring is crucially important. Had I had monitoring in place, I wouldn't have had to get a phone call from a friend of mine telling me my site's down. The site would have told me that it was down. The monitoring would have told me that you have a problem. It would have allowed me to go ahead and start getting ahead of the problem versus waiting for a phone call or an email from a peer. Monitoring is also more than just, is it up or not? How are they using your application? Are they using the new feature that you added? Did you actually deliver value? That all comes from monitoring, which is very powerful. The other thing I want to talk to you about, though, is engagement. This is making sure that your customers have access to the people who are writing the code such that you can have that feedback fire into your monitoring, fire into the value that you want to deliver, and make sure that your customers feel that they're actually being heard of. How many of you use Twitter? Okay, I am extremely active on Twitter. If you use Azure DevOps and you didn't raise your hand, you need to get your butts on Twitter. I'll give you an example why. Back, maybe this was 2 or 3 years ago, back when App Center used to be called Mobile Center, someone tweeted at me and said, hey, Donovan, yesterday my builds were working great. I haven't changed a thing. This morning my builds aren't working. I happen to know the person who was the lead for that particular product. So I said, hey, Thomas, look at this tweet I just got. Someone's having a problem with build. Less than 3 hours later, Thomas retweets to us and says, hey, try it again. In 3 hours, we had identified from a tweet from a customer that we actually had a production issue and pushed a production hotfix out, and all they had to do was rerun their build again. That is the new Microsoft. We're not in this ivory tower where you can't reach us. We're on Twitter, we're on Twitch, we're on Mixer, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, we are in Stack Overflow, we are everywhere you are. Just reach out to us, and I'll give you a hashtag that you can use for my team. It's like a bat signal. We will come running and try to help you and make sure that you're successful, so please, make sure that you engage with your customers so that you can actually deliver better value. So what we're going to do now is we're going to stop with the slides, and willing, if the screen works like I need it to work, I'm going to take you on a tour of all of the stuff that makes that pipeline particularly run the way that I want it to. All right, so what we're going to do now is we're going to drop out of here, switch over. Hopefully this is going to work. All right, let me know if we have any issues there whatsoever. So what we just see here on the screen is the result of the start of my pipeline. I already described what a burr server is, and as you can see, that's what I deployed the very first part. I had to build a burr server. Then I have a Docker image that I actually build. So the UI that you should have been able to see when I typed in dev.peopletracker.us is actually a Docker image running inside of Kubernetes. Of course, everything was deleted, including the Kubernetes cluster, which also has to be stood up as well. After that, when you see web on Windows, that is an app service being built, so it's full framework.net. Web API being deployed to app service. And people are like, Donovan, if you're using Docker and you're using Kubernetes, why didn't you go all in on Kubernetes? Why are you using app service? Well, I've been maturing this like a lot of us do with our software. I mean, we got Windows CE running at Delta, so like we know you gotta improve our software slowly, and originally it was running inside of app service. Not to mention, I think app service is a fantastic service inside of Microsoft, and it wasn't broken, so I wasn't gonna fix it. And I also wanna show you that I can actually deploy to multiple targets in a single pipeline. So it's a full framework web API running inside of app service. Inside of that is also two database projects. How many of you use SQL Server? Okay, keep your hands up. How many of you know what SSDT stands for? A lot less of you, unfortunately. Okay, take notes. SSDT stands for SQL Server Data Tools. It is our best kept secret at Microsoft. Don't tell anyone, right? Because we clearly didn't tell you. It allows you to take database changes and put them inside of your pipeline and act on them, and you'll never write source code again. You remember the days when you had to write SQL? So this gentleman here makes a change to the database, so he writes his alter script. This young lady makes a change to the database, so she writes her alter script. And then what you do is you email all the alter scripts to the DBA, and then they bless the scripts together, right? And then all of a sudden, they try to run them. And if you're lucky, they work, but most times you're not, and they don't work the way that they're supposed to work. SSDT gets rid of all of that stuff for you. Your database is now just a project inside Visual Studio like everything else. You make changes wherever you want, you sync your changes with the project, you commit them to a repository, and everything just magically happens. The burr server is backed by SQL Server, so is my web service. Both of those databases are built inside that project. And obviously, I'm using Xamarin. So I build on a Mac OS with Xamarin for iOS and and Android. That's being built there, and then I finalize all this stuff. So what I want to do is talk you through the summary of this particular build. Now, this is one build. It looks like there's four builds here, but I want to be very clear. This is one single build definition. It is not four builds having to be orchestrated together, having to be cumbled together and synchronized. Nope, I said there's one build, and I need to build on Mac, I need to build on Windows, and I need to build on Linux. And I need you to collect all of the output for me so that I can use it as a single unit. And I'll show you how I did all that stuff. So let's take a quick tour here. If I come over here to my summary, what's really cool is I can see that there's actually a deployment already going. All right. And as you can see, it's running along pretty well, which is really good. So we have our code is actually being deployed out. Our infrastructure is being deployed out here as well. We're going to take a deeper look at that here in just a moment. And then we're going to come down here and look at our code coverage. I'm a big fan of code coverage. And what you got to remember with code coverage is it's not the number, it's the movement of the number. Too many people get hell-bent on trying to get 100% code coverage. And I remember when I first got with code coverage, I was so excited, and I got one of my pieces of code in a website that I run called DLB Racing. It was 100% code coverage. I was like, finally, no more bugs, right? So I ship it, and one of the things that my software does is that when it goes down, unhandled exception, it sends out this SOS, like, dude, I'm going down, is everything I know, like, good luck, right? It was from that page. Like, how is it possible? How is it possible to have 100% code coverage and the first exception I get is from that particular page? So again, it's not the number, it's the movement of the number. You want to make sure people are adding unit tests, but it does not mean you're bug-free. That just means you tested all the paths of your code, not that you test them aggressively, which is what I ended up doing. I was very lackluster. What's really cool about this is if I were to go ahead and open this for you in another window, this is actually a really nice, rich, code coverage report. So you can see it tells me the lines, it gives me percentages. This will happen if I'm using a Java application, if I'm using Mocha and Istanbul, if I'm using Python. It does not matter your testing framework, it does not matter your code coverage framework. We will give you this first class experience no matter what language you program in, no matter what tool chain you're actually using, which is really important. Azure DevOps is not just .NET on Windows. It is any language targeting any platform, and I cannot stress that enough. So the code coverage stuff is really cool. Another thing that's obviously really important is security. We have great partnerships with people like WhiteSource, where WhiteSource will actually go and scan every single package that I'm using and then report for me if those packages have vulnerabilities in them as part of my particular build, which means if I have even licensing issues. If you're using open source, a lot of us just willy-nilly start using packages. But if you use the wrong package, you basically have opted into being open source yourself, which means that that IP that you were trying to protect, you now have to give out to the public if you use the wrong license. And this product will not only look for security issues for you, but also look for licensing issues for you and say, are you really sure you want to do this? Because if you do this, you are now open source as well, and all your IP has to go out to the public. So integrating with things like WhiteSource is really cool. We also had the test as well. So you can see I run quite a few tests here, which is really cool. You can see if they passed or failed. And what I'm going to show you here is that we can do test analytics as well. So if I come here, and I right-click and I open this particular link, we're going to be able to see over time how my tests have been running. So I'm going to say over the last 30 days, show me my passing tests, because I pass more often than I fail. And as you can see, I've had a very healthy pipeline. I've had 100% success rate. This will be able to identify flaky tests for you, hot spots in your code, places where you might need to go off and invest over time. Right? So hopefully you have a chart that looks somewhat like this, which just means you're firing on all cylinders, haven't had any test fails in a long time. But if you do, this is a really great way to be able to find those. Again, does not matter what the language you're programming in. It does not matter how you actually run your test. We'll be able to generate the same report for you afterwards. So this is what the summary looks like. Now let's go and look at what the anatomy of this particular build looks like, which is really important as well. So let's go ahead and edit this pipeline. And when we edit the pipeline, you're going to see those four sections that I identified a moment ago. So once this fires up here, we're going to be able to see that I have the burr being built, and we're just using .NET Core here, which is great. And then every time you see me say publish an artifact, it's taking the output of that particular build and storing it to the server and identifying it as part of this particular build. I'll then be able to grab all these artifacts and use them inside of my particular release. Now this portion here, the Docker part, is obviously running on Linux. To prove that, if I come over here and I click on my pools here, you'll be able to see all the different pools I have access to. Now, one of the things that makes our tool chain very unique is that you'll notice a lot of those start with the word hosted. Everything hosted is literally hosted for you in the cloud for free by Microsoft. And let's check it out. There's Mac OS in there, right? There's Linux in there. Everything that you need to build your products is actually in there. So you do not need to go configure a Mac to do Xamarin development anymore. Everyone clap. That is the worst thing ever, right? Having to install all these stupid patches and SDKs and the right version of the SDK, and it needs to update every 5 minutes. It's just a nightmare getting your Mac configured. Now you don't have to do that anymore. You can literally give it to us, and those Macs are already ready to rock and roll and build all your Xamarin workloads for you, right? So it makes life a lot easier. You don't have to have a, I have this miserable, miserable MacBook Mini. It's miserable. The only thing mini about a MacBook Mini is the freaking performance, right? The price is extraordinary, everything else, the pain is extraordinary, but the price is just horrible. It's a horrible little machine, but I don't have to use it anymore, right? Right now, all I do is I use it to charge my iPhone. It's the best thing it's good for, right? But we don't need it anymore because we have Macs for you in the cloud. But what I did down at the bottom is I actually installed my own, what we call them private agents. What's cool about private agents is you can install them anywhere, on-prem or in the cloud. Matter of fact, this Mac is mine. And I have Parallels on it. So one, as Mac, it's running an agent for me. And in Parallels, I have Linux running, and it's also running an agent there for me because they're just simply faster. My MacBook Pro is faster than the machines we give you for free. And I'm the only person in line for these. Remember, that's a queue that you get in to get onto those free machines. Here, I am the only person in line. My builds happen really fast. And I have to have this demo work while I'm on stage. So I create my own private agents. I also can create private agents in Azure, which is kind of cool. So all the Windows machines are actually being built in Azure. I chose Azure because, unlike many of you, I don't pay for my Azure account. So you build really big machines in accounts like that. So my machine is awesome. It has like 20 different agents on them. They all run really, really fast, right? So that's what we're using for a lot of this demo here as well. So you can obviously build on Linux. You can build on Mac. It's like my mouse or something makes a thing hiccup. And then down here at the bottom, we're going to be able to build all of our iOS stuff, right? Now, what you're going to also notice here as well is that we obviously do use parts of App Center, right? But I needed more than just what App Center can give me, because App Center doesn't deal with my database. It doesn't deal with my web services. It only deals with the mobile app. And I had an entire system here before the mobile app actually existed. So what I did is I, instead of using App Center for a portion of it and Azure DevOps for a portion of it, I just use Azure DevOps for all of it. And then I'll show you where I'm able to call out into App Center to go run my test for me, to go do my distribution for me. So I'm able to leverage both of them, but I only have this one pane of glass that I actually have to use to do it, which is really nice. All these things you're seeing on the left-hand side are tasks. You can go to our task library. Our task library is massive. So as you can see this little thumb here, what's really cool about all the tasks that we have here that basically bring to life the power of our system is that they're all written in the open inside of GitHub. So if you want to write your own, you can actually go see how we wrote all of these. Use these as a template to go write your own, which is really nice as well. Okay, so you don't have to start from scratch. You can use ours as templates. And what's really cool is you can send us pull requests. Two of the tasks that I wrote are actually in the box now. The one I wrote for Docker and the one that I wrote for database deployments actually ended up in the product, which is kind of cool as well. So you can actually contribute back to our open source. If you don't see what you need here, you can actually come over here and go to our marketplace, which is kind of cool. So if we go over here and browse our marketplace in a new window, this is where you can find all sorts of different extensions written by all of our partners. And you can find stuff in here for AWS. Right, a lot of our customers have a multi-cloud scenario. They need to run in Azure and they need to run in AWS, and there's an extension in here that gives you access to everything AWS has to offer from the cloud, and you get to use our build and our release system to actually deploy there, which is really cool as well. So now if we go back, let's talk about how we actually release this code. So if I were to go back over here to the summary of that particular build, I'm going to show you how our release works too. So we add our middle name, go to summary, and then this time we're actually going to open this particular release. And what you're going to see here, as if I zoomed out far enough, is you're going to be able to see all the cool stuff that we've been able to do. So this pipeline is off and running, and it basically does a lot of, I'm really proud of this demo because remember, there was absolutely nothing in my Azure subscription at all, like nothing. And I even go off into GoDaddy and update the IP address of my DNS record from my pipeline. You didn't see me go do anything manually, but it actually spun up a Kubernetes cluster, queried the Kubernetes service for its IP address, used the REST API to call into GoDaddy and say, make sure that dev.peopletracker.us points at this IP address. And if you'll notice that little funny icon in front of dev testing here, this little icon is our release management system realizing that it needs to wait for a DNS record to resolve first before it moves on to the next step. So it's set there every 5 minutes saying, has dev.peopletracker.us resolved correctly yet? Has the IP been updated? Because there's no point in me trying to test an application whose DNS records aren't right yet, right? All they're going to do is fail. So let me just sit here and wait and pull the system until I know it's ready. And when it's ready, I'll go ahead and continue. I've literally automated even the waiting. Right, I've automated the fact that you don't have to come in here and say, okay, everything's good, let me manually approve this, which you would have done had you not had the ability to say, I need you to go wait on this particular process. We integrate with things like ServiceNow, where you might need to go into ServiceNow, perform some task before you're able to continue with your release, we'll go talk to ServiceNow for you. Historically, what you would do is you'd go do that process, send a lot of emails to your peers. One of your peers would then have to come in here and manually say, okay, let's go to the next step. But now what we do is we integrate the two products together. You go do your ServiceNow stuff, and we'll go ahead and pull ServiceNow and say, oh, we're ready to rock and roll, and we'll just keep on moving. So now what should be able to happen, and I always lose my phone. Let's see if my phone is going to play nice with me here. So I come back here, and I click on this particular one. Look at that, the app actually loaded. Not only did the app load, but I've already got a notification saying not only did the app load, but there's a new version of the app as well. So why don't we go ahead and update that right now. And hopefully if our internet's fast enough, we're gonna be able to update this. Now some cool stuff is gonna happen here if I'm fast enough. You notice that we had already deployed through dev, but not into QA yet. If I play with this app now, I will be able to put data into the database for dev that in a moment when we deploy into QA will no longer show up in the app because the app will automatically have moved to match the QA backend that it needs to be matching. And then eventually from there, it'll then update and move to production. As soon as the backend has moved to production, the mobile frontend automatically moves to production with it as well. So we're gonna go ahead and let that continue to install. Let's go ahead and refresh this page here. This should start to load now. Again, this is proving that the dev.peopletracker.us IP address and DNS records were actually updated correctly. So if I were to come over here now, let's go ahead and look at our people list. So this is good. So Tom is already playing with this. This is awesome. Thanks for participating, Tom. I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm definitely in dev. So I'm going to go dev, user, and I'm going to go ahead and say create. And now we see we have a dev user in here. I'm definitely pointing at the dev database. And when eventually we're going to come back here. This is now loaded. I'm going to come over here and go to people. And we can actually see that I'm definitely pointing at dev. You see the dev user in there. Like, once this gets deployed to QA, I'm going to try to remember to come back to this app. I'm going to run this app again, and this app will be not show you dev user anymore because it'll be in the QA environment instead. You'll see Donovan Brown is in there multiple times. That's because it's running inside of the Xamarin Test Cloud, where those applications are actually programmed to go put my name inside this particular app. You also saw the Phantom.js. The Phantom.js user is actually a Selenium test running against the front end of the website. So I'm testing the front end of the website, I'm testing the front end of my mobile application, all is automated part of my particular pipeline, which is really nice as well. So now what we're going to do is come back in here, and let's switch back over to our pipeline here. So let's see if this is going to come back up. Perfect. So let me show you how this is actually built as well. So what we're going to do is we're going to go edit, and we're going to edit the pipeline. How many of you are using infrastructure as code? How many of you don't know what infrastructure as code is, so I need to explain it? Okay, one person raised their hand. All right, perfect. So several of you. Infrastructure as code is the DevOps best practice where you codify the intended environment for your application to run. So if you know you need a web server and an Azure Container Registry and a Kubernetes cluster, instead of someone going into the Azure portal and clicking around and providing and creating those resources, what you do instead is you write a file. The file can be an ARM template, it can be a Azure CLI PowerShell task, it can be Terraform, it can be whatever tool chain that you want. But what you're doing is you're codifying the definition of your environment. What's really cool is that those files being in your repository can now be acted upon as part of your pipeline. Because the only time you saw me go to the Azure portal was to show you that there was nothing in the Azure portal. But I never interacted with the Azure portal. But if I go back there now, what you should see is there's lots of stuff inside of my Azure portal. So I won't switch desktops because your switcher doesn't seem to like that. Let me just type portal.azure.com here and see if we can actually get this thing to pop back up. And then from here, we're going to get inside of my resource groups, which I showed you a moment ago, which were completely empty. And now you're going to see there's actually resource groups in there. I did not come in here and add any of this stuff. This stuff just got added for me. And if I were to come in here inside of Common, we're going to be able to see we have things like an Azure Container Registry in here, my burst servers in here. We have all cool assets. Now, all these assets were defined inside of a particular file, and I'll show you what that looks like, and acted upon with my pipeline, which is amazing. So if we were to come back over here, you'll see they're very simple tasks. All they're doing is basically running PowerShell scripts. I am an enormous fan of PowerShell. How many of you knew that PowerShell ran on Mac and on Linux? Not enough hands are up. It is cross-platform, right? And it's much cooler to write than Bash, right? Bash is really hard for me to understand. PowerShell is really easy for me to understand. And I'll show you how I wrote all of my infrastructure using the Azure CLI inside of a PowerShell script. I am also a big fan of ARM, but ARM simply was causing me way too much pain here. I tweeted one day, ARM is awesome, and I got attacked on Twitter. It was like, ARM sucks. Like, ARM is the worst. ARM is hard to write. Donovan, you should be using A, B, C, and D. I'm like, whatever. I'm going to go ahead and research everything that you said. But one person said, you should be using the Azure CLI. I'm like, I can't use the CLI because I need it to be idempotent. Idempotent means I can run the exact same command a million times in a row, and it won't cause any harm. And he said, Donovan, you're wrong. the Azure CLI is idempotent. And he took, because I had my ARM template that I was showing was in GitHub. It's like a 300-line ARM template. Did a lot of cool stuff, but he turned it into like a 7-line PowerShell script using the Azure CLI. He said, Donovan, this does the exact same thing that your 300-line ARM template does. And at that point, I completely abandoned ARM, right? I've been writing nothing but Azure CLI scripts ever since. And I'll show you what I'm talking about. Let's go over here to our repository here. And I'm going to show you what my infrastructure looks like. So this is, like I said, this project's been growing for a while, so there's lots of projects in here. But one of them is called IAC, which is Infrastructure as Code. And if I were to go, and let's look at our deploy task. What's interesting here is the majority of what you're going to see here actually isn't even the hard part. This is just me taking in parameters. I think I can zoom in a little bit for you. This is just normal PowerShell here at the top. And then at the bottom, it's like English you can read. There's comments in here which are really nice. I log into my subscription. I come back in here after my subscription is logged into. I create a resource group. Inside that resource group, I create an AKS cluster. And I tell it, hey, by the way, do not wait on my AKS cluster. Don't even wait for it, because AKS clusters take a long time to create. You start it, I'm going to go create other stuff. So down below that, I start creating a SQL Server database. I create a SQL Server. I create app services while the AKS is being built. Then at the bottom of my script, I simply do a spin loop saying, is my AKS cluster done yet? Right? Because I've been able to provision all this other stuff in parallel that makes running the script really, really fast. And if I run this a million times in a row and all the infrastructure is already there, this script will do absolutely nothing. It'll just say, everything's good, let's keep on rolling forward, which is really nice as well. So I'm able to use these as part of my particular pipeline. So one last time, I'll show you the pipeline before we get out of here. Everything that I wanted to show you in our pipeline is actually how we talk to app services. App services as well. Edit this. So if we were to come over here, and let's go down to our task here. As you can see, this is where we're calling out into App Center, right? So I'm still using all the benefits of App Center, the crash analytics, the analysis, using all of the testing functionality, the distribution functionality. All that stuff is being done right here inside of my actual pipeline, just as a simple task inside my pipeline, which is really nice as well. So as you've been able to prove, you, I've been able to show you that we actually have an app that's now working on my mobile application. Let's see where we are in our pipeline and see if we've actually moved all the way into our QA environment or not. So let's come over here. I zoomed in so far, now I can't see where anything is. Let me zoom back out here. All right, so our QA infrastructure has been deployed, and we're actually doing QA testing. So now, if the magic part here is that if I come back over here in my mobile app and I click on people, what I should not see is the dev people, right? All the dev people are missing. But now I can go over here and say create. I want to create a QA user instead, because now I'm pointing at a completely different backend than I did before. I click on save, and now I'll have all my other users in here. So this is what I'm trying to talk about. My mobile app did not get redeployed. It did not get rebuilt. It's the same mobile app, but as my backend moves across the pipeline itself updates the app, letting it know, hey, you need to be pointing somewhere else at your backend. Only build your code a single time, right? So I will make sure that all the Burr Server code is actually open source here shortly, so that if you want to stand one of these up, you can. It can be an Azure function, it can be a web service, it can run anywhere that you want, but it's a central place, and there's already a PowerShell module that you can use as part of your pipeline that will go update your Burr Server for you. I've written all that code already, so that it's easy for you to integrate inside of your pipeline. All right, cool. So now you've seen the demo. This is exactly what I wanted to show you. Let's see if I can get my PowerPoint to run one last time, and we can get out of here, because we're getting, yep, I got 3 minutes. So let me give you some resources here, and then we'll leave. All right. We went through this slide already. And this is my team. Well, this is just a portion of my team. I was in Norway the other day, and I woke up, and my team was more than twice as big as it was when I went to sleep. That's the excitement of a reorg, right? Like, who reports to me now? Holy crap! All right, so I had to go fix all that. So this is not my entire team, but this is the part of my team that has been identified with this little nickname from the community. It's, most people just call us the League. We are 5 diehard DevOps advocates. We live and breathe this stuff. If you love containers and open source and Linux, you're going to be talking to Jessica Dean. And if you ever get a chance to see her speak, I highly recommend it. She's an extremely entertaining speaker. This is my man for all things Chef, SRE, PowerShell, Windows infrastructure. That's Steve Morosky. Then we have Damian Brady from Octopus Deploy. If anyone remembers Octopus Deploy or knows Octopus Deploy, he's from there. And then Abel Wang, probably one of the best developers I've ever met. So it's kind of cool because these are my devs and my ops. We're like almost standing in DevOps, which is really important. Also this, single most important thing I'm going to tell you, that hashtag, which is basically the abbreviation of this big crazy word over there, will get the attention of not only my team, but other teams at Microsoft who I found out are also monitoring that hashtag. So So when you ask us a question about DevOps, when you ask us a question about our products, you're basically getting Microsoft's attention by using that hashtag in any tweet. Now do me a favor, do not test it. Right? If you actually have us a question, please ask us a question. But I had someone say, I wonder if this is going to work, hashtag the league. And we're like, haha, not funny. Right? Because like, we all take time out of our days to go read those tweets and see if we can actually help you. Other resources that you can get, if you do want to follow me on Twitter, you can go ahead and shoot that QR code. I am at Donovan Brown on Twitter. I am a host of several shows on Azure. And what you can also do is just go to YouTube and type Donovan Brown DevOps. You'll get a lot of stuff there on videos that I've done. Hopefully this video will be up there soon enough so you can watch this one and share it with your friends as well. So Channel 9 is a great resource, and you can obviously learn more about DevOps from Microsoft here at aka.ms/whatisdevops. And then I'm Donovan Brown. I want to thank everyone for coming to Houston for this. I know it's hot as hell here, and I really appreciate that. Thank you so much, everyone.
All right. Wasn't that incredible? All right. Thank you, Donovan, for making it over here. Thank all of you guys. Thank you so much.
All right.